Hi everyone and welcome to Revision Media with me, Paul Stevenson, on this 30th of December 2020, on the eve of New Year's Eve. This year is finally almost over. I think for most people we'll be in agreement that we'll be glad to see the back of it. But what a destructive, horrible year it has been. We have seen the acceleration of every process and every agenda that the globalist, socialist, totalitarian, oligarchical freaks want to subjugate us all under. And as I say, everything that they've done this year has just been an acceleration of all their processes economically, socially, in terms of our liberties. It really has been shocking what's occurred this year. I'm almost just bored of the whole thing now. But as I say, we're at the end of 2020. But what does that mean? I mean, we're just going to roll into 2021. And there has been, you know, we've had Christmas over us. We've had Boxing Day over us. And there has been no good news. It just gets worse, you know. So I'll just play a clip from BBC to save me breaking down. Well, I will break it down. But you can, you know. This is what it's like here in the UK. I think we're pretty much worse than everyone else. Maybe I've been a little bit provincial in my thinking. I think Germany's pretty bad as well, but we just seem to be really laying it on thick with the restrictions and the increasing draconian measures, if that's possible. But it seems it is possible, and it's just like getting beyond the joke now. But here's what I was sort of woke up to yesterday, or was it just before I went to bed yesterday?
The full extent of the COVID crisis facing the NHS has become more apparent today. More than 50,000 new cases were reported in the past 24 hours. That's yet another record for the UK. And a matter...
Cases. I think we've broken down about cases, how loose that is.
...of extreme concern, according to Public Health England. The head of the NHS in England says that health workers are once again in the eye of the storm, while a leading scientific advisor to the UK government says urgent action is now needed to prevent what he called a catastrophe in the new year. Any changes to England's tier restrictions will be announced tomorrow. Our health correspondent Catherine Burns has the latest.
We all wanted to have a few days off over Christmas, but instead of being asked to come back to work.
This time it's a wave. This time we've seen a massive increase.
If we continue with the current rate of admissions, we are very, very close to becoming overwhelmed. So it is affecting anyone and everyone.
So it's just an escalation in the fear-mongering. I think that they've looked back at what's happened so far and decided that there's too many people who have maybe got... wind of the truth and the exaggeration from the media, and are maybe just not complying enough. There's not enough people wearing masks over some of the Boxing Day shopping scenes. They've decided to, you know, up the ante, escalate the hysteria and propaganda, and all this talk about overwhelmed. Yes, if you remember from the first lockdown, the whole logic that everyone was explaining to everyone was that we had to prevent the NHS from being overwhelmed so we could flatten the curve. So what was the point of that then? We went into this lockdown apparently so we could avoid overwhelming the NHS, and presumably, even though I was extremely skeptical at the time to the point that I knew it was BS, presumably then we would have had time over the summer when the virus was less extreme. Of course, they brought in the masks in the summer when there was no threat and the virus had subsided completely. But presumably then they had time then to prepare. So if there was a second wave in the winter, the NHS wouldn't be overwhelmed. So what happened to that idea? And also it would suggest that lockdowns don't work. You know, we've had all these lockdowns. We've had more lockdowns than Olympic Games at this stage, and we just keep getting more extreme lockdowns. So isn't it quite clear now that we've had all these lockdowns and it hasn't done a shred, according to their own hysteria, it hasn't done made a shred of difference. So what's the point of it then? They obviously don't work. Because the virus just persists despite all the lockdowns. Of course, what they'll say is, well, this is why it's such circular sort of logic and why it's such a black hole we're stuck in. Because every time that we'll say, well, it's quite obvious then the lockdowns don't work, they'll say, oh, it's because not enough people are adhering to it. So it just goes round in circles. There's going to be no way out of this. Are we ever going to be out of this situation? It's incredibly claustrophobic and increasingly so. Because people are already worn down by this. And then you're greeted with this a day after Boxing Day, essentially. You know, there's no reprieve. It's just like, no, we're going to turn the screw up a notch.
Just beginning to be exhausted. It's been such a long year.
Doctors and nurses from the NHS frontline telling us what it's like dealing with a pandemic that, after months and months of hard work, is getting worse. Queen's Hospital in Romford today, 20 ambulances waiting outside, some on double yellow lines because the parking bays are all full. At one stage, you can see staff bringing hot drinks out to patients waiting in the ambulances. The hospital.
What they don't tell you is that our NHS is crap. It's overwhelmed. It's underfunded. There's far too many people draining on it. We've exponentially increased the population in the last 20 years by about, I don't know, I've done the figures before, but I think it's about 22 million or something. We just allow everybody in here to use the NHS. The NHS is overwhelmed every year. It's just governments play it down because they don't want to have that on their watch. But this year, it suits their agenda to amplify it rather than play it down and suppress it. Because it fits this narrative of the coronavirus overwhelming the NHS and blaming the coronavirus. And therefore, we need to have more stringent restrictions on and draconian measures to restrict our liberties. So under normal circumstances, most governments don't want to be associated with an NHS, which is a breaking point. But this year, they just want to amplify it. So, but every year, our NHS is overwhelmed. And miraculously, the flu has disappeared this year. So all those flu deaths, the coronavirus has swallowed up the flu. It has a monopoly on illness now, and it's basically just bullied and usurped the flu into oblivion, and we're left with no flu, or pretty much no flu deaths or statistics this year. So, obviously, like so many other conditions or whatever, these flu deaths have been shifted over to the coronavirus stats. And these stats, as we've already alluded to and broken down, are so misleading. I mean, when you look later in this piece, you can't see it because this is radio, but it'll say, you know, deaths for any reason after a positive test for coronavirus within 28 days. Now, do people not read that? Because in big writing, how many deaths we've had in the last 24 hours and what's the total deaths? And they have it in very small writing that most people probably don't even read or even think about. Is it anybody who dies from anything within having had a positive test for coronavirus? The positive tests are completely unreliable. But let's say that even that they were 100% bulletproof reliable. What that means is anybody who dies, and it says on their website, for any cause, has a positive test within 28 days of their death from testing positive with coronavirus. So 28 days after I may have tested positive coronavirus, even though, say, I may have had cancer for two years and I died of cancer, which would have been, say, normal anyway, or a heart attack because I suffer from heart disease or whatever, that's recorded as a coronavirus death. Now, if that is not amplifying the stats for coronavirus deaths, I don't know. It's a very low bar, for what's recorded as a coronavirus death is the point. And we also know that the majority of the deaths are people who are old and suffer from pre-existing conditions. Those types of people are very easy to kill because the flu kills those types of people every year. And they don't ever stress that. They don't really even mention it anymore. And I mean, it's just the same stuff. And they, of course, they suppress any of this type of information where you actually have some context when you're processing and digesting this data. It's playing very fast and loose with the truth and statistics. It really is statistical leisure domain, basically, and relies upon people not looking at it. And for those who do look at it, then they just suppress that anyway and demonize those, and those who do speak out against it basically become pariahs.
Bill says they were being cared for safely, but that it's under considerable pressure and is asking staff to take extra shifts. It's a similar picture across London and the southeast of England.
I'd say this is the most challenging extended period that I've ever seen, and I'd like to just take the opportunity to pay tribute to the staff who have worked phenomenally hard and well.
More than 21,000 people are being treated in hospital for COVID across the UK. In Wales, they're dealing with their highest level of patients now.
The patients who are coming to ITU now are a degree sicker. A lot of them are desperately unwell. And we've seen a real reflection of that in the amount of patients that have died.
In Northern Ireland, hospitals say they are under pressure but coping. And in Scotland, people are being asked to stay at home over New Year as cases hit a record high. This new surge in cases couldn't come at a worse time of year for the NHS. Winter always brings extra pressures with more respiratory illnesses, as well as slips, trips and falls in icy weather. This year, on top of that, and the pandemic, social distancing means hospitals need to keep patients further apart. And the NHS in England is operating with around 10% fewer beds than usual. In England, 24 million people are already living for restrictions, the highest level. The government is about to decide if that's enough. And this warning from a scientific advisor, act now.
Don't introduce tougher restrictions in areas in the north and areas that are not.
Sage is the advisory board to the medical advisory board to the government. But of course, the government is very selective in the type of scientific expertise that it listens to. You've had the whole great Barrington Declaration just encapsulates the suppression of any other view. And that's the point. You know, they won't allow discussion. They won't allow a debate. They won't allow any other information, any other views by esteemed, respectable epidemiologists from Oxford, Sunetra Gutra, who else? You've had Carr Hennigan from Oxford University. I mean, serious people that have had slurs on their characters and their professionalism that would just be unheard of before all this. So it's quite clear they've got an agenda. It's propaganda. They know what they want to push, and they're going to push it regardless.
Currently in tier four, they will rise to very high levels of disease and hospitalisation, similar to those seen in London.
The NHS Chief Executive's annual thank you message to staff acknowledges that this year has been the toughest that most can remember, but there's hope.
We think that with vaccine supply continuing to come on stream, we will have been able to offer all vulnerable people across this country this COVID vaccination.
3 weeks ago, Margaret Keenan became the first person to have a COVID vaccine outside of clinical trials. Today, she's had her second booster dose, a real piece of good news, but now millions more need to be vaccinated too. Catherine Burns, BBC News.
Well, 1,500 military personnel are to help with the rollout of mass coronavirus testing in schools in England next month. They will hold online advice sessions and give telephone guidance to staff, with children mostly carrying out the test themselves. But teaching unions say the schools have not been given enough time to make plans, and some head teachers are calling for the government to delay the start of term. Our political correspondent Damian Grammaticus has the story.
Empty classrooms now, but will it be safe if millions of children start filling them next week? Or could these become incubators for the new, more infectious strain of COVID-19? The current plan is for a staggered return with mass testing.
You see, this new strain, this new variant of coronavirus has come at a time when I think that the government had kind of and the media with their scaremongering had kind of lost control. There's too many people like us and on talk radio, and too many people at protests, and too many people who listen to alternative media have had too much of an effect on people where they're not scared of it anymore. They're extremely skeptical, to the point that most of them have absolute distrust in the government and see it for what it is. Propaganda and an opportunity to destroy our civil liberties and to destroy Main Street and small to even medium size or even big businesses, and that it's the big fish that are eating the smaller fish, and because they want a monopoly on it, and they want to crush the little man, and they want to take complete control, and they want a monopoly on business, and they want a monopoly on wealth, and this is the greatest wealth transfer in human history. And it's a process which is underway, and the dominoes haven't all fallen yet, but it's coming. And 2021 and 2022 are going to be very dark times. This year has just been the start of it yet, but we have just gone into the woods this year. And people think that we've been coming out of it. And we're, you know, I remember back at the time, they thought, oh, we'll just go into lockdown, and then, you know, we'll suppress the curve, and then we'll come out of it again in the summer. That's what people thought. You know, we were warning against it. I was like, no way. You should never allow them to go into lockdown. Do not give away your freedoms. This is not going to get better. They are just going to get, you know, get more and more draconian and more severe with their restrictions. These people are power-hungry maniacs. And it's like, you know, try getting your ball back from the bully in the playground when you give it to him. He's going to want your lunch and your pocket money and everything else after you've given your ball away. So that's what you're dealing with. When you give governments an inch, they will take a mile. Never let a crisis go to waste. And they will not let a crisis go to waste, even if they have to manufacture and create the crisis, which, in my opinion, they've absolutely done. And at the very least, they've completely amplified and manipulated and exaggerated the whole thing. But it's not going to get any better. And what was the point I was trying to make? The point I was trying to make is, I forget now. I was going to say, so I had some more specific point to make. But yeah, we should never have given away our freedoms in the first place, is the whole point. And yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think because people have become wise to it, and knowledge has been expanding, and more and more people listen to alternative media and see the mainstream media for what it is, a bunch of lying social engineers who are part of a Jewish, international Jewish cabal. They own the media. They own the international banks. They're the ones who are conducting the theft. They're the ones that are robbing the Western nations. They have always done the same thing in history, and they own the media. So these are just two tentacles of the same fifth column, which basically is right across the Western nations. And they have tremendous influence beyond that too. And they have decided that, in my opinion, they've decided that people have just been gotten too wise to it, and they're not scared enough. And they're not being compliant enough. So now they've had to bring in this new strain, and now you're seeing this second wave of hysteria. It's a type of temperature. It's a type of what's the word I'm looking for? It's a type of sort of tension that was around in March when this first came out, the scenes of the hospitals, you know, quick quotes from there, we've never seen it this bad, this is a catastrophe. You know, it's exactly the same type of environment and the same type of presentation and fear and hysteria that was created back in March. And they're just doing the same thing again because they believe that people aren't scared enough and they need more compliance. So we'll have to scare them into more compliance. And that's what's happening.
Of secondary pupils and staff, in many cases, children themselves carrying out the tests under supervision.
It's not going to be easy. It will be difficult. We are in a national emergency, but it will make a huge difference.
National emergency. That's the type of language we're using. National emergency. Let me tell you the type of national emergency it is. If you removed all the propaganda, all the media hysteria, all the lockdowns from it, people would be getting on with their lives as normal. This wouldn't even be noticed. There'd be no effect on for the majority of people. Not probably the same type of thing as a bad flu season. That's all it would be. People wouldn't even notice it. These guys have hammed this up and exaggerated the whole thing to the point where they're using language like national emergency. That's total bullshit.
To teachers and children, and hopefully mean that schools will remain open.
The government wants children back. Homeschooling for many isn't viable, lacking the support and the space, the computers and iPads to make it work. But scientists, unions and head teachers are all urging a delay. For now, the idea is that the military, who've already been running testing, will help. Not in schools, but remotely, giving guidance online or over the phone. The plan envisages less than one soldier per school.
We are educationists. We can support the government. It's good we're going to have some members of the army. But for 3,500 secondary schools, 1,500 troops doing webinars probably isn't the government response that we were looking for.
In some parts of the UK, the return to school is already happening later. In England and Northern Ireland, children are due to start next week. In Wales, most should be back by the 11th of January. In Scotland, it won't be before the 18th. Many head teachers want more time to prepare.
Things have just come through to schools very late, and I think it's certainly led to a lot of stress and a lot of panic over the Christmas holidays to try to get people recruited. Our community have been excellent since we've had press coverage and since we've talked to our community. We've had some volunteers, but we've still got nowhere near enough.
Schools have stepped up right the way from March, delivering online learning, turning things at the turn of a coin. We're very used to being adaptable. We really want this to work, but we don't know where we're going to get the volunteers from.
If there is a delay, primary schools and children of key workers may not be affected. But in secondaries, it might mean online learning or even an extension to the holidays for a week or two. Then those taking exams back first. An announcement could come as soon as tomorrow. David Raticus, BBC News.
All right, so you get the picture. And then we can go to, in fact, I want to play this clip by Carl Hennigan. He's the ex professor of medicine at preventative medicine at Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company. It's a short clip, but it's worth listening to. But he of course has been, you know, demonized for the most part as well, and just ignored at best.
Brings us to 6:59. The men who advised the government to lock down, Sir Patrick Vallance, Professor Chris Whitty, appearing before MPs today, MPs on the Science Select Committee, to explain their reasoning. What is the evidence that led them to be so certain that we had to do something so potentially devastating to our economy and to many people's lives? In particular, as we mentioned on the programme yesterday, they used a graph that suggested that there could be 4,000 deaths a day if we did nothing more. Let us talk to Professor Carl Hennigan, who's director of the Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford University. Morning to you.
Good morning.
And to wider matters in a moment. First, though, that graph, and it was such a striking graph, and it was shown live on television over the weekend. In your view, should it simply not have been shown?
Yes, you're correct, because mathematically it is now proven to be incorrect, particularly the 4,000 estimate of deaths that would occur in December. And why that is, because it's already about 4 weeks out of date. And actually, Cambridge, who are doing it, the MRC unit there, have already provided updates to provide lower estimates. And their estimates are much nearer to the truth. And they have a system called nowcasting and forecasting, where it's much nearer to the correct data. As an example, what the model 4 weeks ago was showing about 1,000 deaths on November the 1st, and actually only 200 actually occurred.
Is there a model that you trust, that you believe, that does tell us at the moment, if we do nothing, what the numbers of deaths will rise to?
Well, what the nowcasting and forecasting system do is only project about 2 weeks into the future. And what they say after that point, it becomes highly uncertain. And why is that? Because right now, cases are shifting in a way that they weren't 3 weeks ago. They are starting to flatline. Admissions are flatlining. And in effect, deaths are starting to flatline. So there'll be an update, I hope, on this system tomorrow on Wednesday that will give us a clear understanding of where we're going. Also today, ONS will be reporting on excess deaths. So the next 24 hours will give much more useful information that should inform whether a lockdown occurs or not.
You use that word flatline. I mean, hospital admissions are rising pretty steeply, aren't they? So I'm just looking at the stats. 1,345 admissions for COVID on for October the 29th. Now, that is roughly double the number 17 days earlier. That is what causes alarm, and surely.
And these, I've chosen this clip, not even though it's a little bit out of date, because it highlights the same type of exaggeration and lack of actual proper data and the manipulation of the data, and they're still doing it today. It's the same thing over and over again.
Rightly.
So one of the things about hospital admissions is it doesn't take account of discharges. It also doesn't tell you who that person is. For instance, everybody going in hospital is being tested. If you look at the patients in hospital data, that's a much more useful measure. And if you look at that on the 31st of October, it was 9,213. And it actually dropped for the first time on the 1st of November to 9,077 by about 130 patients. That's the first drop in over a month on that data set. So I'd look at patients in hospital, not the number being admitted, which is very variable and quite noisy in what its content is.
And that's overall, when you look at the specific areas, and Liverpool has been one much in the news in the last few days, mm-hmm. Would you accept there what we are being told, which is that they are pretty close to capacity?
Yeah, so what you've got is these pockets around the country where trusts like Liverpool have got into trouble with over half the patients being COVID patients. But again, let's look at the data. The data in Liverpool is showing cases have come down by about half. Admissions have now stabilised. So yes, there is a problem in Liverpool, but actually the tier restrictions, the people in Liverpool have dropped cases from about 490 a day down to 260 a day, a significant drop. That R value is well below one in Liverpool at this moment in time.
What do you want the MPs to ask Sir Patrick and Professor Whitty today?
Well, I think what it's been difficult for the MPs is to get a really clear picture of the data and the evidence so that they can understand what's going on. And in that basis, then ask informed questions. But I truly would want them to ask if is based on the actual data, what's going on, Sir Patrick and Chris, as opposed to what do you think in the future the models look like, which have shown to be wrong. And I think if they start to dig into that data, they'll start to see that many of the measures are actually working as intended.
Really? You think the tiering measures were working?
Well, look, what's happening here is we've got social distancing going on, we've got hand washing, we've got a test system, we've got many of the measures. Now, there's a law of diminishing returns, but actually putting all them measures together, we are flattening the curve. You cannot get rid of these viruses. You've seen how they come across the whole swathe of Europe at this time of year. But there's no doubt we have been flattening the curve. What's happened in some areas like Liverpool, there has been outbreaks that have caused this impact on the NHS. So it's been right for them to have some more measures. But any more measures beyond that now, again, a law of diminishing returns are more likely now to create harm than benefit.
Professor Carl Hannigan, Director of the Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford, thank you very much.
Right, so there is a guy, you know, respected. He just doesn't get listened to. And, you know, he's not even saying, okay, this is completely overhyped. He's just saying that, you know, even the measures of social distancing and people washing their hands, that's kind of sufficient to bring the curve down a little bit and to control this. And that ultimately, trying to control a virus, I heard, was that Peter Hitchens referred to it as trying to put the leaves back on, you know, after autumn. Yeah, but trying to glue the leaves back to the trees when they're falling off in autumn. It's wishful thinking. It's kind of ridiculous. It's ludicrous, really, to think you can just control a virus, you know? Viruses are viruses. But anyway, no one's really given him any. He's certainly not advising the government, you can be sure of that, because he wouldn't be advising all these draconian lockdowns. There's an interesting article here on Michael Chozodowski's site in Global Research. The coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. The real danger is Agenda ID 2020. Excuse me. What is the infamous ID 2020? It is an alliance of public / private partners, including UN agencies and civil society. It's an electronic ID program that uses generalized vaccination as a platform for digital identity. And that's what we're really dealing with, isn't it? Complete and utter control is where this all leads. So thank you, everyone, who decided to give up all their liberties willy-nilly at the drop of a hat, including the church, because of temporary security. Well done, everyone. Ignorance really is fatal, it would seem. Maybe everyone's just got so complacent with our little freedoms here over in the West, going about their business, taking things for granted, being so provincial in their view of history, being so provincial in their geographical knowledge of the world, of totalitarian governments, which are so prevalent around the world, and have failed to recognize the unique freedoms that we've enjoyed here in the West. Well done. Thank you all. With foresight, this article by Peter Koenig was first written on March 12, 2020. It is among the most popular articles in 2020. It reveals the hidden agenda behind the COVID-19 vaccination initiative. It seems the more there's written about the causes of coronavirus, the more the written analysis are overshadowed by a propaganda and fear-mongering hype. Questions for the truth and arguments for where to look for the origins and how the virus may have spread and how to combat it are lost in the noise of wanton chaos. But isn't that what the powerful financial elites behind this intended pandemic want? Chaos, panic, hopelessness, leading to human vulnerability. A people become an easy prey for manipulation. Exactly. And this is why I was saying, don't give up your don't give up ground when you're in a strong position. And then give it up to the enemy, who is then going to be in a stronger position and you're in a weaker position. I've heard people in the church, for example, say, oh, well, we'll draw a line here and we'll draw a line there. You ain't going to draw a line, shit. Excuse my language. They've got no backbone. They couldn't draw a line when they had strength. So these people are not to be, these are unreliable people to be going into battle with, spiritually or otherwise. They bury their head in the sand and don't understand the danger and don't want to understand the danger because it's inconvenient until it gets, well, all, you know, they really ought to teach people what communism is about. Study Alexander Solzhenitsyn and you might actually take a stand knowing that where it's likely to go. Today, the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus COVID-19 a pandemic. This is, he's going back when he wrote this in March. When there is not the slightest trace of a pandemic might be the condition when the death of infection rate reaches more than 12%. In Europe, the death rate is about 0.4% or less, except for Italy, which is a special case where the peak of the death rate was 6%. China, where the death rate peaked only a few weeks ago at about 3%, is back to 0.7% and rapidly declining, while China has taken full control of the disease. And that will, and that with the help of a not outspoken about medication developed 39 years ago by Cuba called Inferin Alpha 2B. And also, there was a lot of evidence that hydroxychloroquine was effective in dealing with this. Because there's other countries in the world where malaria is a problem, and the hydroxychloroquine has been widely used to treat malaria. And they there's countries around the world. I should pull up the article. I had it at one point, and I've got it somewhere, about the whole hydroxychloroquine efficacy. And that's just been ignored as well. Anytime you look at an avenue where there's a way of controlling this thing, they're not interested. So the medication developed 39 years ago by Cuba called Interferon Alpha 2B, very effective for fighting viruses and other diseases, but is not known and used in the world because the U.S., under the illegal embargo of Cuba, does not allow the medication to be marketed internationally. The World Health Organization has mostly likely received orders from, quote, above, unquote, from those people who also manage Trump and the, quote, leaders, unquote, of the European Union and her member countries, those who aim to control the world with force, the one world order. This has been on the drawing board for years. The final decision to go ahead now was taken in January 2020 at the World Economic Forum in Davos. This is the same people who talk about the Great Reset, which has become so infamous this year, and so many people have, you know, this has just gone viral throughout the internet, this Great Reset thing, and it's woken a lot of people up. A lot of people who used to call people like us conspiracy theorists are no longer so naive. So behind very much closed doors in Davos, of course, the Gates, GAVI, an association of vaccination-promoting pharmaceuticals, Rockefeller, Rothschilders, and others, they are all behind this decision, the implementation of Agenda ID 2020. After the pandemic has been officially declared, the next step may be also the recommendation either by the WHO or individual countries to, quote, force vaccination, unquote, under police and or military surveillance. Notice in the last clip the gradual encroaching and pernicious presence and introduction of presence of the military into the schools of all places. Let's get the kids used to it, to seeing police around. This is to bring in the police state. You know, to bring in this martial law climate. Under police and or military surveillance, those who refuse may be penalized, fines and or jail, and forced vaccinations all the same, or you just can't fly, you can't get a job, whatever. You might lose welfare if you're on welfare, that type of thing. And that's not conspiracy theory, because I broke down a story on this network 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, I think, talking about that very thing. And some Denmark politicians talking about the what's on the table if people don't take the vaccination. If indeed forced vaccinations will happen, another bonanza for Big Pharma, people really don't know what type of cocktail will be put into the vaccine. Maybe a slow killer, that's what I think it'll be, that acts up only in a few years, or a disease that only hits the next generation, or a brain debilitating agent, or a gene that renders women infertile. All is possible. Always with the aim of full population control and population reduction. In a few years' time, one doesn't know, of course, where the disease comes from. That's the level of technology our biowar labs have reached, US, UK, Israel, Canada, Australia. Another hypothesis at this point, only a hypothesis, but a realistic one, is that along with the vaccination, if not with this one, then possibly with a later one, a nanochip may be injected, unknown to the person being vaccinated. The chip may be remotely charged with all your personal data, including bank accounts and digital money. Yes, digital money, that's what they are aiming at. And that digital money, whether they inject a microchip into us or not, that's coming. Because they are destroying the currency by design. All this money printing, which is going to debase and completely end up destroying the value of the currency and end up in hyperinflation, will result in an economic great reset, which will involve direct payments from central banks in a digital currency. And at a price, because they will then have complete control over your life and whether you can put a roof over your head, whether you can eat, and you will have this social score phenomenon where if you don't comply, you don't get your little, if you're in America there, your little Fed wallet credited with Fed digital currency over here, ECB, if you're in Europe, the Bank of England here as well. This is what they want. This is where they're headed. Yes, digital money is what they're aiming at. So you really have no control anymore over your health and other intimate data, but also over your earnings and spending. Your money could be blocked or taken away as a, quote, sanction for misbehavior, for swimming against the stream. You may become a mere slave of the masters. Comparatively, feudalism may appear like a walk in the park. Yeah, I mean, people talk about neo-feudalism, or people talk of, yeah, I mean, this is going to be even worse than neo-feudalism or feudalism. It's going to be feudalism on steroids. It's not for nothing that Dr. Tedros, DG of the World Health Organization, said a few days ago, we must move towards digital money because physical paper and coin money can spread diseases. I mean, that's the ridiculous reason they give for moving from physical money. Nothing to do with the fact that you're currently in the process of printing it into oblivion and that it's going to be worthless anyway. We'll be like the Weimar Republic. No, we got to get rid of it. Because you see, and this, of course, is the smokescreen for the absolute monstrosity of a bubble and debt bubble in everything across the world in the economy, which is going to implode. And then this is going to be the excuse for it. Well, you know, paper money is a big problem, and we just need digital currency. A precursor for things to come. Or for things already here. In many Scandinavian countries, cash is largely banned, and even a bar of chocolate can be paid only electronically. I've been intending to do a discussion on this whole cashless society on the Monday show on Republic Broadcasting Network with Richard, because of the huge implications of it in so many areas of our lives. We haven't gotten around to that, but I'm sure we can have a go at it in an upcoming show. We are moving towards a totalitarian state of the world. This is part of Agenda ID 2020, and these steps to be implemented now, prepared since long, including by the coronavirus computer simulation at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore on the 18th of October 2019, sponsored by the WEF and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Bill Gates, one of the chief advocates of vaccinations for everybody, especially in Africa, is also a huge advocate of population reduction. Population reduction is among the goals of the elite, with the WEF, the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Morgans, and a few more. The objective, fewer people, a small elite, can live longer and better with the reduced and limited resources Mother Earth is generously offering. This had openly been propagated already in the 1960s and 70s by Henry Kissinger. This is the type of stuff that, you know, Alex Jones has been talking about for a long time, and people call him just a complete nutter. In fact, all of us who've been called conspiracy theories, we weren't wrong about anything, really. In fact, as usual, it's worse. It's like immigration. Whenever you were talking about Enoch Powell warned about immigration, not only was he not wrong, but it was way worse than he predicted. But yet at the time he was called a scaremonger and a hater and a racist, and none of this is going to happen. This is just scaremongering. And it's always worse. So it's been openly propagated in the 1960s and 70s by Henry Kissinger, foreign secretary in the Nixon administration, a co-engineer of the Vietnam War, and main responsible for the semi-clandestine bombing of Cambodia, a genocide of millions of unarmed Cambodian civilians. Along with the CIA, Kissinger engineered coup on 9/11, 1973, in Chile, killing the democratically elected Salvador Allende and putting the military dictator Pinochet in power. Kissinger has committed war crimes. Today, he is a spokesman, as to, so to speak, for the Rockefeller and their Bilderberg Society. 2 weeks after the computer simulation at Johns Hopkins Medical Center in Baltimore, Maryland, that produced, aka simulated, 65 million deaths, the COVID-19 virus first appeared in Wuhan. By now, it is almost certain that the virus was brought to Wuhan from outside, most likely from a biowar lab in the US. Yeah, and that's what I've always thought. I mean, you know, China's had the plane for that. How easy is it to get this, you know, virus planted over there and then blame the Chinese? It's interesting that they should put it in China, though, because there may well be a war declared on China at some point. There's already trade wars there. Quite frankly, America's been sucking on, parasiting off China for years now. They send cheap goods to America, and America sends them paper money, which is completely worthless, really, at the end of the day. So it's interesting that they planned it to start in China, because if you can blame China, and lots of lives and livelihoods have been destroyed and lots of suffering is occurring, and if you can point the finger at China and say, well, they started it, well, then you get support for the war, which I believe may well come. So what is this infamous ID20? Sorry, I've just gone back. So it says the ID 2020 Alliance at their 2019 summit entitled Rising to the Good ID Challenge in September 2019 in New York decided to roll out their program in 2020, a decision confirmed by the WEF in January 2020 in Davos. Their digital identity program will be tested with the government of Bangladesh. GAVI, the Vaccination Alliance, and partners from Academia and Humanitarian Relief, as they call it, are part of the Pioneer Party. Is it just coincidence that ID 2020 has been rolled out? But anyway, I'll wrap it up there, but that is a brilliant article. Really does hit the nail on the head with so much of it. It's in Global Research, Michael Jozodowski's website. It's an article by Peter Koenig in today's Global Research. You can just find it online. The 30th of December, 2020. And the article is the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. The real danger is agenda ID 2020. So if anybody wants to check that out, it's there for everyone to read. All right. Happy New Year, everyone. It's been just an unprecedented year. I wish I could be more positive about 2021, but I've got no real good reason to at this point. And we'll just have to soldier on. Thank you for everyone who's tuned in over the year. And I'll be back again next Wednesday, which will what be the, I think, is it the 5th? 5th of January, I believe it is. So until then, have a happy New Year as much as you can, and God bless you.